Hello, everyone. This is Erica Spicer Mason with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm thrilled to have the chance to sit down with Kyle McElroy, the Vice President of Clinical Operations at Conifer Health Solutions, who will talk to us about denial management strategies. Kyle, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure having you here today.
Thanks, Erica. I'm happy to be on the show.
We're happy to have you. And before we dive into the meat of our conversation, I wanted to know if you'd like to share just a little bit more about yourself, your role, Conifer, whatever feels top of mind for you.
Yeah, happy to. Again, Kyle McElroy, Vice President, Clinical Operations for Conifer Health Solutions.
Wonderful. Well, Kyle, again, we're happy to have you on Becker's podcast today. And denial management, I mean, this is a topic that we're seeing across Becker's coverage. We're hearing this anecdotally from leaders that it's something that is an ongoing challenge. So to get us started, can you just give us an overview of the current denial landscape? What are the most common types of denials that healthcare organizations are facing?
Yeah, Erica, you're right. This is an area that we're starting to see a lot more attention, and rightfully so, from leaders and in all aspects of revenue cycle. You know, if you kind of just think about, you know, or look at the denial landscape currently, you know, most market studies that you come across, you know, over the last 2 years have suggested an increase in denials around 20%, some more, some less. A lot of reports are coming out on the clinical denial space as seeing an increase, in particular medical necessity or level of care. We're also seeing in technical areas big increases. ED, E&M level downgrades have been getting a lot of attention from our clients, and, you know, certainly a concern. And then even more recently, as I've talked with some of our clients and some of my peers, you know, we're seeing increases in DRG downgrades, you know, related to APR DRGs with payers or situations removing the severity of illness code or downgrading it from a, you know, a 4 to a 3 or 3 to a 2 down there. So there's, you know, sort of a culmination of several factors that are leading to increasing denials in one aspect or the other. And it is certainly getting a lot of attention from CFOs and financial leaders.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Appreciate you outlining those challenges, Kyle. So in light of all of that, could you discuss some strategies for effective denial management and any opportunities that you see in your work that are effectively preventing denials?
You know, I think it starts, you know, with block and tackling. You know, I think the first thing is a governance structure and a true owner. You know, many organizations and even myself and you know, and earlier in my career, you know, being, you know, you have a lot of subject matter expert resources, whether they're in the nurse appeal space, whether they're HIM leaders, they're coding leaders, they're case management, they are in charge of a book of business that ties to denials. But oftentimes organizations don't really have a true governance structure or true owner. And I think that really is sort of the fundamental getting started, is just getting a single ownership structure in place. And then on top of that, we've seen some of our most successful clients, and certainly something we recommend and like to work on with folks, is having a dedicated denial prevention team. It really focuses on the process of improvement and drives into the details. And these resources are really able to, you know, fix the systemic changes that could potentially prevent, you know, many denials in the future. So that one's a big one that we're seeing. And then on top of that, just access to the data and analytic capabilities, you know, the pattern recognition of denials coming through is important. Being able to get your hands on the information to look at it a little bit closer month over month is really important. And then even lastly, just other strategies, like, you know, once the denial prevention team or others are able to kind of highlight some issues, is in having the right mitigation steps, you know, bridge routines or payer specific mapping for some of these smaller dollar ones that's stopping to require folks to physically, you know, make changes like add modifiers or, you know, change a CPT code or change a charge code. Some of these bridge routines will really help prevent some of those denials from actually slowing down your cash.
Thanks, Kyle. So between, you know, having a governance structure in place, a dedicated denials prevention team, access to data and analytics, it sounds like a really targeted approach here is necessary to see some meaningful improvements in those denial rates. And I wanted to transition to talk a little bit more about how these denial rates are affecting organizations on the whole. So Really, how do denial rates translate to financial losses? And what are you seeing as some of the most effective ways to mitigate those impacts?
Yeah, so we like to look at denials and denial management in sort of three different tranches or three different ways. You know, you're going to have your initial denial and disputes that by and large will have a high overturn rate, but it costs you money and time. It slows down your cash and then requires, you know, additional resources, whether billers, collectors, maybe subject matter experts, coders to retouch those accounts. You know, so we like to look at that as sort of one area. And then the second area we like to look at is just your pure denial write-offs. You know, what are the accounts that we're not winning upon appeal? And, you know, how much revenue is that costing the organization on a month over month basis? And then lastly, we see a lot of inventory that becomes exhausted. You know, you have payers that have one chance, you know, one opportunity to appeal, some maybe two, but you have, you know, pathways that we like to explore once accounts are ultimately exhausted and seeing if there's ways that we can batch those up and into different strategies to basically present the case that, you know, there was high quality care provided from the organization. Organization and there deserves to be reimbursement or payment on those cases. So we like to look at each one of those and then establish a rate, usually you know, denial rate, you know, denial dollar against your net revenue, and then sort of measure those different tranches over time with some of these different effective strategies that we're talking about.
Thanks, Kyle. And that's really helpful the way that you just outlined that. And I know tying this back to something you mentioned earlier, which is the data and analytics piece and having capabilities there in order to prevent denials. Would love to know a little bit more about how healthcare providers can leverage functions like automation and data analytics to reduce those denial rates and also improve overall revenue cycle performance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to continue to see new technology enter this space of revenue cycle on the denial side. I think in all aspects of it, I think you have certain challenges that are present now in organizations where there's fragmentation of systems and there's just different limitations, particularly in the appeal space where resources do not have tools to really help them become more efficient in their job. So, you know, we specifically like solutions that help clinicians become more efficient at their job, specifically with drafting appeal letters, you know, essentially bringing in clinical content. Whereas in a lot of organizations, you know, you're starting appeal letters from scratch. You know, that includes a clinician opening up the electronic medical record and searching for pieces. It's just entirely inefficient. And so we definitely think that there'll be a lot more opportunity in those space. And we also think that the technology as it enters the space will improve the quality of the appeal letters, reduce the variation. Oftentimes, you have to have certain types of strategies on a certain type of denials. You know, you want to make sure that you're presenting a persuasive argument in that appeal letter, not just copying and pasting clinical information in there. So, we definitely think technology in this space will continue to add value as organizations will adopt it. Also, we feel that automation will play a big factor in technical denials. You know, these are, you know, situations where on the other end, there's technology in place that are likely automatically denying some of these situations. And on the reverse end, there just has it's been a little slow to get there with automation to, you know, automatic technical appeals. And so we'll continue to see a lot of progress in this particular space as well.
Yeah, I appreciate the forecast there, Kyle. Just with the sheer number of denials we know organizations are seeing, it's hard to imagine folks writing those appeal letters, to your point, writing those manually. It's almost unimaginable at this point. So, really can see how technology is going to play a bigger role here. And going a little bit deeper there, I'm wondering if you can share maybe a few examples or explain how specific tools can help with tracking and improving denial management processes.
Yes, you know, two things really come to mind. First, you know, having a partner or an organization or support structure that has inventory management solutions for denials are really helpful. A lot of times, you know, these denials will come in so fast. You know, organizations are building out large volumes of claims, And then just the same, you're getting a volume of every day of denials coming in. And what we also sort of see, particularly in the appeal space for clinicians, is that we have a wide variety of skill sets that are different. You know, you might have some critical care nurses, you may have some nurses that have focused in maybe OB areas, maybe some in telemetry, and sort of matching the right denial activity to the right skill set has also a value in not only productivity efficiency because they're used to those types of clinical scenarios, but they're also giving it better content, higher quality of letters. And so that's one of the things we really try to help work with our clients on is, you know, helping provide some solutions in place to have, you know, the right activity to the right resources at the right time. That's a big one. And then secondly, the other one that really comes to mind is utilizing the payer portals has really been helpful in reducing denials through the access to medical information. And sometimes in organizations, there's not really a clear owner of who, you know, sort of supports the payer portals and whether or not they're being maximized. But, you know, just, you know, thinking about the authorization delays and getting updated clinicals to obtain an inpatient level of care authorization, having that information available is really key, can really help reduce the number of level of care denials an organization may have if they're just maximizing stuff that may already be available to them.
I think those are great examples, the payer portals and matching the right denial to the right skill set, as you said, Kyle, really helpful examples. And when you said payer portals, it reminded me that it's very challenging to have a conversation about denials management with, of course, also addressing payers and payers' relationships with providers and how those two entities can really support each other bidirectionally. So we know that those strong relationships are crucial for addressing this issue of denials. So in your view, what are some best practices for developing and really maintaining effective partnerships with payers?
We've really seen an increased interest from many of our clients on having structured JOC or joint operating committee meetings. You know, these are not a new concept, and a lot of organizations have had some flavor of JOC meetings. But I think, you know, step back here, you know, a couple years past the pandemic, and again, we've seen increasing of denial activities. We've seen large demand for clinical services in a lot of our health systems. And so we're, you know, all these sort of old problems are coming back now. And I think it gets back to having just focused, you know, JOC-like meetings with our payers and really just having a set agenda where you can talk about trends, you know, see different, you know, supported by clinical examples to try to better understand where the denials are coming from and maybe root cause. You know, it sounds like a simple approach, but almost every time you invest that time, you're going to come out of those meetings with learning something or, you know, have some items that you can take away to educate either different areas of the revenue cycle or potentially, you know, come up with some different strategies on how to address some of those types of denials. So we do find it really helpful. And then also to look to your point, have relationships with the payers, you know, have some consistency, especially if you have a physician that can join. Typically, JOC meetings will have a physician representative on the payer side, but really going doc to doc also helps on exploring some of the specifics on some of the clinical cases in more detail.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Sounds like communication is key, and JOCs, especially structured JOCs, sounds like a great opportunity for kind of streamlining those communications and collaboration. So shifting a little bit, I'm also wondering how physician advisor programs can contribute to reducing denials and really enhancing those revenue cycle operations. Any insights there?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of organizations really try to either build a physician advisor program or expand on a physician advisor program, specifically with having identified KPIs around the clinical revenue cycle areas. One that really comes to mind is since we are seeing more denials on the front end, particularly with, you know, either authorizations or level of care denials, is having the opportunities for physician advisors engaging in payer peer-to-peer events and really looking at those cases more specifically and talking to a payer physician and going, you know, clinical doc-to-doc has really seen some pretty good success on overturning some denials, particularly those patients who really need an inpatient level of care and are expected to sit, be in the hospital for more than, you know, 2 or even 3 days. And so we're seeing really, you know, kind of an increase there that the physician advisors are not only just helping out with level of care, but they can also help with education on some of the other internal med providers or hospitalists around physician queries and other sort of documentation matters that really help reflect the appropriate level of care and the appropriate clinical documentation for those cases. So there's really just a lot of good applications that physician advisors can kind of serve in, but they're really a nice liaison into the revenue cycle tie-ins because they're so clinically focused and they can really help on the front end. So we've seen, again, a lot of investment in this area for organizations and really feel it's the right strategy.
That's great. It sounds like between physician advisors, you know, structured JOCs, increased technological capabilities, there are a lot of opportunities for hospitals and health systems to kind of hit at the denials management issue from a lot of different angles. So can't thank you enough, Kyle, for sharing all of those with our listeners. I know this is top of mind for so many leaders right now. But just to kind of close our time together, I wanted to get your perspective on the near future. You know, what trends or changes are you seeing in this landscape? And how should healthcare organizations really be preparing for developments in denials management?
Definitely feel like our denials will likely continue as we're back to normal, you know, a year or two post-pandemic. You know, there will certainly be opportunities to infuse technology, evaluate personnel, and other sort of opportunities to improve the denial space for both write-offs and initial disputes. Our folks here at Conifer Health are here to support at conifer.com and happy to engage and answer any questions or evaluate any solutions that you have in place to see if we have any different recommendations. But reach out if you have any questions. We're happy to help.
Well, Kyle, thank you so much. Really appreciated hearing your perspectives and for you taking the time to join the podcast today. So thanks again for a great discussion.
Thanks, Erica.
And we'd also like to thank our sponsor for today's podcast episode, Conifer Health Solutions. To tune into more podcasts from Becker's, you can visit our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.